Donald Trump and I believe that America ought to be tough and America ought to have a strong foreign policy. But when people like Kamala Harris send our sons and daughters, our young people, to fight in stupid wars, it is the young generation that carries the burden of that. We're going to stop sending our young people to faraway lands. We are not the policemen of the world.
Right. Don't you hate when people like Kamala Harris send away our kids to foreign lands? Stupid people.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
Who would do that?
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
Right, JD?
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Right.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internets around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com, wondering what kind of stupid people would vote for J.D. Vance and Donald Trump. Well, I guess they're the ones who believe that they actually didn't want to send off your kids to wars, to stupid wars around the world. Welcome to the Bradcast. Delighted to have you here. As we go to air, folks are participating in perhaps the most important thing that we can all do this year in order to fight our way out of our nation's and sadly our planet's current nightmares. They are voting. Hopefully they're not voting for cretins like J.D. Vance, who are willing to lie to them about sending our kids off to foreign wars. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
There are local elections on Tuesday in Tempe, Arizona. Democrats are hoping to flip a vacant Republican-leaning seat, a statehouse seat in New Hampshire on Tuesday. Voters across the state of Mississippi are holding their statewide primary elections, including for the U.S. House. And in Georgia, more than a dozen folks of all parties are participating in or on the ballot for a jungle primary to fill the seat vacated in January by far-right MAGA champion, now with a few regrets, Marjorie Taylor Greene, in a contest that will result in the top two vote-getters from Tuesday of any party proceeding to a runoff election for that seat on April 7. If nobody on Tuesday wins 50% plus one, which is a near certainty with that many people on the ballot, we will, of course, have any noteworthy results and or problems at the polls or during tabulation on our next Bradcast tomorrow. More on this year's elections in a moment, but a quick-ish update on Donald Trump's war on Iran, which if you heard the show yesterday, you recall that he told a CBS News reporter that it was, quote, very complete, pretty much, he said yesterday, which was, of course, good enough news at the time to reverse a plunging stock market that day and reverse what were skyrocketing oil prices, at least for a bit, and also good news for those of us who don't care for war or who, like Trump, have no idea why we are even waging this one in Iran, other than to distract from his Epstein files woes and things like the allegations from a woman interviewed four times by the FBI who says that she was sexually assaulted by Donald Trump when she was just 13 years old. And it's also probably good news for those who believe everything that Trump says until he opens his mouth just a few minutes later to say something completely different than he said 30 seconds earlier when he was making up the last thing that he said before going on to completely make up the next thing that he has to say.
A little something for everyone.
Indeed. And to that end, on Monday alone, as media outlets tried to keep up with all of this, Trump made very clear that he has absolutely no clue what he is actually doing in Iran, and if or when any of it will actually end. talk about Kamala Harris sending our kids off to stupid wars. President Donald Trump described the war in Iran as, quote, short-term on Monday, as NBC notes in its lead, suggesting the 10-day conflict that has roiled the Middle East could be nearing its end. Well, that's good. Before also warning of intensifying strikes if a key oil route is restricted. Quote, we took a little excursion because we felt we had to do it to get rid of some evil, said Trump, and I think you'll see it's going to be a short-term excursion, he said. This while speaking to House Republicans during a retreat at one of Trump's golf resorts in Florida. How good is our military, right? Amazing, he added, as if he was sort of reminding the attendees not to forget to tip their cocktail waitresses. How good are they, am I right? This, quote, this was just an excursion into something that had to be done. We're getting very close to finishing that, Trump said. It's going to be ending soon, Trump said a little bit later at the news at a news conference. Trump did not put a timeline, however, on the end of the war, though when he was pressed for details, he asked how he squared saying that the war would end, quote, soon, with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's remarks that the attacks are, quote, only just the beginning. That was a interview for 60 Minutes on Friday. Well, Trump said, quote, I think you could say both. Sure, it is going to end soon, and it is just the beginning. Why not? We live in a world where facts and words and reality apparently mean nothing whatsoever. And the House Republicans in tow at the Doral Country Club down in Florida, well, they were more than happy to applaud along, apparently. Don't forget to tip your waitresses, right? They're amazing. Quote, we could call it a tremendous success right now. As we leave here, I could call it, or we could go further, and we're going to go further, he said. So, quote, so the Strait of Hormuz is going to remain safe, he told reporters later. We have a lot of Navy ships there. We have the best equipment in the world. Again, most of their ships are down at the bottom of the sea, he said. But we will hit them so hard it will not be possible for them or anybody else helping them ever recover that section of the world do anything, he said.
You know, it's obviously it makes it much more pronounced how difficult it is for him to complete a single coherent sentence when you read his actual
quotes.
When you
actually read what he says, yeah.
Yeah. And you don't sane wash it.
He doubled down on those threats later when he wrote in a Truth Social post in the evening to vow that Iran would be hit, quote, 20 times harder if it does anything to inhibit the flow of oil in the strait. He's talking about the Strait of Hormuz there. Iran has insisted that not one barrel of oil will pass through the strait as long as U.S. and Israel continue their bombing. To which Trump said that, quote, death, fire, and fury will rain upon them, vowing to, quote, take out easily destroyable targets that will make it virtually impossible for Iran to ever be built back as a nation again, before claiming, quote, I hope and pray that does not happen, and arguing, quote, this is a gift from the United States of America to China and all those nations that heavily use the Hormuz Strait. Hopefully it is a gesture that will be greatly appreciated. Sure, why not? The Hormuz Strait was, in fact, closed in completely predictable response to the U.S. bombing Iran and cutting off the world's oil supply in the bargain. So we will bomb them to make them open it because that is our gift to China. We forced it to be closed, and now we're forcing it to be opened. And so I hope they all remember us.
Do they remember to say thank you?
I think, you know, I think Donald Trump has given them quite enough, given China quite enough gifts for a while, but hopefully I'll get to that part of today's show in a bit. As the Political Insider sheet Punch Bowl tried to make sense of the day and Trump's remarks at Doral, they explained that Trump acknowledged that he knew attacking Iran would lead to a spike in oil prices. He said, quote, I knew oil prices were going to go up if I did this. Really? Did you? Or did you think that they would just fold the way that Venezuela did, and you thought you'd get away with it yet again?
It really does speak to reports that the Trump administration was really surprised and did not expect that Iran would so totally predictably use its obvious leverage, its obvious choke point of the Strait of Hormuz. They did not think this through.
You think?
Yeah.
He then went on to lie again regarding oil prices, which have gone up nearly 100% since this war began a little more than a week ago. He said, quote, "They've gone up probably less than I thought they'd go up." The old "I meant to do that" defense. He knew they'd going to go up, but it turns out not as bad as he thought. The point here being, Donald Trump has no idea what he is doing. None. He is making all of this up as he goes. If you're looking for a reason, if you're looking for a purpose of what he's doing, you will not find one. There is no grand plan. Just in case you're still giving him far too much credit for anything that he is doing. The oil prices dropped a little bit on Monday after reaching at one point more than $120 a barrel. That's from just $57 a barrel 1 week ago. Gas prices at the pump are nonetheless still spiking nationwide. Saudi Aramco, the world's largest exporter of oil, said that there will be, quote, catastrophic consequences if the Strait of Hormuz remains shut. Death, fire, and fury will reign. By the way, rain, he spelled R-E-I-N. Death, fire, and fury will rain upon them, he said later on that social media post. And then he went on Monday to describe this as a short-term excursion that is very complete when he was speaking to House Republicans and CBS News. He also said, quote, "We'll not relent until the enemy is totally and decisively defeated." But at the retreat in Florida, Punch Bowl notes, Trump said, quote, "We've already won in many ways, but," he added, "we haven't won enough." All of which left GOP lawmakers and official Washington, as well as Tehran and Tel Aviv, wondering which one is the right answer. Well, good luck to all of you and to all of us. That, along with the Pentagon's news that to date, as many as 150 U.S. service members have now been injured in Trump's absurd Iran war, including, they say, 8 who have been seriously wounded, whatever that may mean. And as CNN reported late on Tuesday, that Iran has begun laying mines in the Strait of Hormuz, the critical energy choke point where at least 20% of the world's oil and gas supplies go through every single day, at least when Donald Trump has not started an ill-considered war with Iran. One sort of bright spot among all of this, I guess, as Time magazine notes today, if Republicans can't get their arms around the spiraling costs of oil, they will need to get familiar with a new greeting. Quote, "Hello, Speaker Hakeem Jeffries." The last 10 days, they say, have brought the single biggest disruption to oil in history. That's from Times Philip Elliott. He notes markets have responded rationally with panic. A gallon of gas is up almost 50 cents from this point last week as the White House is giving confoundingly mixed messages about when this war might end and what would be considered a victory. Oh, you think? Republicans' hopes of holding on to their slim majorities in the House and Senate may well hinge on the cost at the pump as the war against Iran lurches into its second week. And the math they note is pretty clear. There is a correlation between the cost of oil and losses endured by the party running the White House. The pattern, Elliott notes, can be seen going back half a century. In the last three midterms, for example, in which the price of oil was adjusted for inflation, hovering around or above $100 a barrel at this point in the election cycle, the party in the White House lost 29 seats on average, according to a Time analysis. Speaker Mike Johnson, he notes, can afford to lose just one single vote in order to keep hold of his gavel. Trump's saving grace may be that it is only March when oil prices slide lower as it gets closer to Election Day, as it did in 2014. And in 2022, the wave elections can end up being not quite as big. But the numbers, he says, we are seeing now offer little comfort for GOP strategists hoping to ride out this Middle East turmoil, regardless of the cockiness coming from the White House. The calendar year began with oil at $57 a barrel. Time magazine explains, analysts warn that it could triple that by the end of March if the Iran conflict continues to clog the strait. Republicans see the peril as clear as day. In 2010, oil in today's dollars reached $113 in March of that midterm. Democratic President Barack Obama saw his party lose 64 seats in the midterm election that year. 4 years later, things looked just as bad for Obama with a barrel of crude that March hitting $132 in today's money. Oil prices then fell as we got closer to Election Day. Nonetheless, Obama lost another 13 seats. Do the math here. Now, there has been obviously a lot of changes, a lot of gerrymandering since then, when maps were redrawn after the 2020 census, and of course in recent months as Trump has become desperate and ordered Republican states to gerrymander their gerrymanders. But still, these are big numbers, and they do appear to be tied to the price of oil. Correlation is not causation, as they say. But
true, but even if the circumstances have changed around people being able to vote, voter suppression, and gerrymandering, the overall principle is likely still remains the same.
Trump's last midterm election back in 2018 was more of a mixed bag, notes Time. At this point in the cycle, oil was in today's dollars about $79 a barrel, so it was lower. But prices rose from March through September, when voters typically start paying attention to elections. Trump lost 42 allies in the U.S. House that year, though he did pick up some seats in the Senate. Anyway, a bit more on the ecological and environmental costs beginning to add up now for the world in Desi Doyen's latest Green News report later this hour.
Yep.
But anyway, as horrible as all of this is, history tells us there should be a price to pay for it. We will see if that happens again this year with the November elections. By and large, the only thing that will, I think, ultimately matter, at least as far as our fight, what we can do for our country and, yes, for the world along with it, frankly, as I see it right now. Time concludes their report. They say as much as Trump is trying to downplay these consequences, there really is no place for him to hide from them. Quote, it's going to be ended soon, Trump said on Monday, before then adding, quote, and if it starts up again, they'll be hit even harder. Election Day, Time notes, is now a little less than 8 months away, or 238 days from now, but who is counting? If all of this was meant to make Trump's Epstein files woes go away, well, Trump's war on Iran has successfully taking Jeffrey Epstein off of the front pages, at least a little bit, at least for now, even after documents that the DOJ had attempted to hide were finally released late last week amid the bombing and the death regarding allegations that both Epstein and Trump had sexually assaulted a 13-year-old girl many years ago. The Epstein estate appears to have eventually settled with the now woman who sat for four interviews with the FBI about all of this back in 2019, though her lawyer at the time said that she was holding back many of her remarks about Trump, quote, for fear of retaliation, unquote, amid the then sitting president's first term. So, yeah, a lot of this has been, knocked off of the front pages, at least for a while. So let's do our best to make sure you hear about it. The DOJ had failed, as you'll recall, just before this story, this war was launched. The DOJ had failed to release three of the four interviews with this woman until public pressure finally forced them to do so last week, including the woman's uncorroborated allegations that Trump sexually assaulted her in the 1980s after she was introduced to him by Jeffrey Epstein. The woman, as noted, claimed she was 13 to 15 years old when Trump hit her after she bit him, let's just say during a sex act that he forced her to perform, and then he punched her in the head when she did. The White House called the allegations, quote, completely baseless, and they attacked the credibility of the unnamed accuser, who was interviewed not once, not twice, not three times, but four times by the FBI, who would normally not do that unless they had some reason to believe that she was credible on some level. In their, well, this week, the Post and Courier in South Carolina, they have, in fact, now verified several key details from this woman's account. In an investigative report that I will link to, so you can read the whole thing when posting today's show at bradblog.com, in hopes that, you know, at least some of this does not get completely lost down the memory hole of Trump's Iran war, given that hiding this material is at least as good an explanation, if not the best one, for why any of this is happening in the first place in Iran, to be frank, as I see it. In their in their report on this, the Post and Courier verified key details from the woman's accusation, for example, regarding Trump sexually assaulting this girl when she was 13. A Justice Department source confirmed that the FBI did indeed find her credible, according to the Post and Courier. And while her specific allegations against Trump were not themselves independently verified by the outlet, the Post and Courier confirmed other details of her account, including that her mother rented a home to Jeffrey Epstein in South Carolina, and details about an Ohio businessman, the woman also accused of assault, who was affiliated with a for-profit college. The outlet also verified that the woman's mother was charged with stealing $22,000, allegedly to repay or to pay Jeffrey Epstein, who had allegedly extorted her with nude photos of her daughter. So there is more, but the verifiable details of her account do appear to add up. But who knows? Maybe she just made up the part about Donald Trump using details that, well, I guess sound very, you know, similar to other accusations that have other women have made about Donald Trump. Sure, that could definitely have happened. She just could have made those things up. That's what the White House claims, after all. When have they ever not told the truth about anything? And despite the war in Iran being used as an effort to cover all of that up, well, I do not think it is going to work in the end. And I suspect that Donald Trump knows that as well. So his domestic efforts to try and confuse or scare voters enough to somehow either keep them from voting or being able to pretend there was fraud in this November's election so that, you know, so that's why his party lost or something, as opposed to him just being a terrible president. Well, that effort to confuse Americans domestically in our elections, that also continues this week. As the New York Times reported on Monday, the FBI has expanded its so-called criminal investigation into purported irregularities in the 2020 presidential election. As asserted by the loser of that election, Donald Trump, and those who like to play along with him but have not been able to come up with any evidence of irregularities, much less criminality, much less widespread fraud in the 6 years that we've all been focused to endure this game. Yes?
So they're going
to
go back to that well.
Yes, they are.
That's what they do.
They only got so many wells. So, yeah, Trump, apparently Trump's FBI issued a grand jury subpoena for a bunch of information about the 2020 election results in Maricopa County, Arizona, which has become somewhat of a Democratic stronghold in the battleground state in recent years. The The subpoena was quietly issued in recent days to the Arizona State Senate. Why did it go to the Arizona State Senate? Well, the GOP-controlled chamber ordered and oversaw the sprawling, ridiculously performed partisan so-called audit that you may recall, the audit of the 2020 results. You remember that debacle from several years ago now, ordered at the time by Arizona's Senate Republicans for ballots to be reviewed in Maricopa County in the months after Trump had lost to Joe Biden. Warren Peterson, the Republican president of the Arizona Senate, confirmed receiving the subpoena. In a post on social media on Monday, he wrote, quote, "Late last week, I received and complied with a federal grand jury subpoena for records relating to the Arizona State Senate's 2020 audit of Maricopa County. The FBI," he said, "now has the records." The move by investigators, the Times reports, indicated that the Trump Justice Department, and make no mistake, the DOJ is now the Trump Justice Department. It is entirely controlled. It is run. It is, yes, weaponized by Donald Trump himself. So the DOJ had now added a new state to its effort to supposedly reexamine the 2020 race. That inquiry was first disclosed in January when FBI agents executed a search warrant at the elections warehouse in Fulton County, Georgia, removing their truckloads of voting records where they had previously been preserved by court order since the 2020 election due to ongoing court challenges still underway by some Trump supporters in the state. Trump hailed the move on Monday in Arizona to send out the subpoena on his failing social media site. He linked to an article about the demand for records by the right-wing reporter named John Solomon at this right-wing outlet called Just the News. Solomon is close buddies, by the way, with Trump's FBI director, Kash Patel. Just a coincidence. Quote, "Great," the president wrote on social media, linking to the story, pretending he did not know about it previously. The subpoena issued to the state Senate, according to the Times, appeared to be a way to get around the fact that many of the records from 2020 in Maricopa County, which includes Phoenix, the way to get around the fact that most of those records have already been destroyed under normal, totally lawful election practices. Federal law mandates that records must be saved for 22 months after federal election, after which they may be destroyed. The ridiculous audit in Maricopa that you may remember because we covered it in great detail on this program years ago now.
Because it was insane.
That was sponsored with millions of Arizona taxpayer dollars by the Republican state Senate at the time. It was carried out by the now defunct company named Cyber Ninjas. You'll remember them. Well, after that, and after lawsuit, they basically went out of business to avoid trouble. But they ran a six-month review of more than 2 million votes in the Maricopa County, Arizona election from 2020. That's Arizona's largest county, after Trump supporters insisted that his loss was the result of fraud. But they failed to find any fraud in that long process. But, you know, maybe they missed something. So let's check again somehow. In the end, that review, that audit in that stadium or arena they were in, that determined that there was no evidence that Trump had been cheated out of victory. Remember that? They used the special magnifying glasses, the black lights they put the ballots under.
Oh, yeah, the Chinese bamboo paper or something.
Fibers in the paper they were looking for. Yeah, all to no avail. In fact, the Cyber Ninjas report, their final report, as flawed as it was, found, in fact, that Joe Biden had 99 additional votes that year and that Donald Trump actually had 261 fewer votes than he was credited with in the certified results. So, yes, the last time Trump supporters tried to find fraud in Maricopa's 2020 election, they discovered that he lost by more votes than he was credited with losing by in the first place. And while the physical ballots were destroyed after the Cyber Ninjas audit, Maricopa County officials provided the Senate at the same time, the state Senate, with 8 terabytes of data, including digital images of the ballots, ballot images. Those are the digital photos, sort of, that are taken of each ballot by the scanner when it is scanned, and which, at least in Arizona, is thankfully preserved, thanks to the long-fought efforts by election integrity champions in the state, like our friend John Breike, who's been on the show many times over the years, including during that dumb audit when he was the one who actually exposed to the world that the ninjas were looking for the bamboo in the ballots. But he has fought to retain ballot images so folks could go back and look at elections and make sure that the paper ballots weren't changed, that they are the same as they were scanned on election night, etc. That image data, according to the reporting by the Arizona Republic at the time, was ultimately given to Republicans and then transferred to a cabin in Montana to be investigated and changed. And who knows else what? Remember that? That was just part of the madness of all of this. Well, in his article on Monday, Trump's wingnut reporter buddy, John Solomon, appeared to suggest that the subpoena may also have sought some documents connected to the 2024 election. For some reason, that's unclear. It's also unclear why the state Senate would actually have any of those records. Solomon asserted that one of the legal bases for the subpoena was an unreleased report by congressional staff members who claimed to have observed irregularities in that race in 2024 at a warehouse in Arizona where blank and filled out absentee ballots were stored. Okay, well, Trump won that election. But sure, let's see the evidence as you've got it for us. Who knows? Maybe we'll find that Trump actually lost in 2024 as well. Someone call the ninjas. The FBI affidavit used to secure the warrant in Fulton County, Georgia, back in late January, that indicated that the inquiry was begun with a referral by a guy named Kurt Olson, who is now the White House's so-called Director of Election Security and Integrity. So, yes, all of this is being run out of the White House for whatever good or bad or really stupid reason that they have to do so. It's also the case, at least in Georgia, was being overseen by Thomas Albus, the U.S. attorney for the Eastern District of Missouri. He was just someone, I guess, that Trump found that was willing to go along with this nonsense. Albus is a longtime member of this right-wing legal group in Missouri that includes several other pro-Trump lawyers and dead-ender 2020 election deniers. Outraged officials in Fulton County, Georgia, have since taken legal action against the Department of Justice, demanding that the voting records seized in January be returned to the county. Even though the secure chain of custody now on this on those ballots has been broken, what will come of the Maricopa business? Well, we will see. But word of advice, don't hold your breath. Like the seizure in Georgia, this is all sort of performative nonsense meant to make headlines, to produce some sort of an excuse if Trump's party loses in November. Oh, it was just all that fraud. And otherwise, just to scare you. Well, don't be. Just keep your heads down. Keep your eyes on the prize 238 days from now. But who's counting? And while all of this stupidity continues, remember Trump's comment yesterday that, quote, this is a gift from the United States of America to China. Remember that when he was talking about trying to reopen the Strait of Hormuz that he shut with his war? It is a gift to China, just not in the way that he thinks it is. Let's take a quick break and we will come back with the real gift that Trump is giving to China, at least one of them, and the latest Green News Report with Desi Doyen. All of that still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
Hey,
Hey, this is Brad. Here at the Bradcast and bradblog.com, we fight for election integrity all year around, like no other media outlet in the nation. But of course, we need your help to do it. Please stop by bradblog.com/donate to make an automated monthly pledge of any amount you like, or even just a one-time only contribution to help us remain on your public airwaves and completely independent. The fight for voting rights, civil rights, and to save our planet continues. Please help us continue that fight independently over your public airwaves by stopping by bradblog.com/donate right now. Go ahead, do it right now. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
Asked a girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I want to be famous, a star on the screen. But you can do something in between. Baby, you can drive my car. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can drive my car. And baby, I love you.
Yeah, but here's the problem. We can't drive their car. I'll explain in a moment. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I wish we could drive their car. Over at climate journalist Peter Sinclair's blog called This Is Not Cool.
Which is a fantastic blog.
It's been a long time since we've had Peter Sinclair on the show.
True.
He highlights an economist who recently noted, quote, ask yourself the simple question, why does China have 50,000 kilometers of high-speed rail, roughly 30,000 miles, and the United States has not 1 mile? Why is Chinese infrastructure advancing at a pace that would have seemed impossible a generation ago, while American infrastructure is literally falling apart? The answer is not complicated. China does not go to war. The United States, in its nonstop, undeclared war that is never voted on, never debated, never honestly accounted for. The cost is not just money, it is freedom. It is the steady transformation of this republic into a military state, one that funds foreign carnage while its own people live on crumbling foundations, both literal and figurative. So here's what we're not doing lately, because we were dumb enough to elect Donald Trump to a second reign of terror in office. Trump on Monday said that his war against Iran and his plan to try and reopen the Strait of Hormuz to get gas and oil flowing again to the world was somehow a gift to China. Well, yeah. But not in the way that Trump thinks. In fact, Trump has been gifting China at least since taking office last year, gutting the landmark efforts by the Biden administration to try to promote American-made renewable energy manufacturing and electric vehicles with tax credits and subsidies and so forth, before Trump then came into office and began cutting the knees out from under the U.S. Clean energy industry and the U.S. auto industry, clearing the path for, guess what, China to lead the way and to make billions of dollars at it in the renewable energy sector, from wind turbines to solar panels to mass storage batteries. The technology of the future right now, which we have talked about for some time on the Green News Report. And yes, all of that does include electric vehicles that do not require dumb, pointless, endless wars over oil in the Middle East. Well, according to Fast Company, a business outlet that spotlights innovation and emerging technology last week, the largest Chinese automaker, BYD, just destroyed, they write, any remaining argument against electric vehicle adoption. At a March 5 launch event in Shenzhen, China, the company announced the Blade Battery 2.0, a new battery that can drive more than 620 miles on a single charge. In the process, the company exposed, according to Fast Company, just how far behind the rest of the EV industry has now fallen, especially in the U.S., where we noted on one of Desi's Green News reports not long ago that BYD now outpaces Elon Musk's Tesla in global electric vehicle sales. As Fast Company notes, gasoline-powered cars have held on to two supreme advantages for a century: the five-minute pit stop for, you know, filling up the tank with gas, and the typical 400-mile range that enabled people to take a long to take road trips without much worry. Meanwhile, EVs have suffered from long charging times, shorter ranges that induced range anxiety in potential buyers who mostly preferred to stay with internal combustion engine or ICE cars. Or in some cases, hybrids. With the release, however, of its new Blade Battery 2.0 and Megawatt Flash Charge 2.0 architecture, the fear is now over, declares Fast Company. According to the official figures announced at the event last week, high-volume production BYD cars can now drive over 621 miles on a single charge. Add roughly 250 miles of range in the time it takes to order a coffee and rely on a battery pack that refuses to die before the car does, with a guaranteed 620,000-mile lifetime, unheard of in any EV. Wouldn't it be nice if this was an announcement from, oh, I don't know, Ford or GM instead of China's BYD? BYD's latest battery and charging tech makes other vehicles look like Model Ts, writes Fast Company. At least for now, as the second largest manufacturer of batteries in the world, BYD is currently supplying batteries to other manufacturers like Toyota, Kia, Hyundai, and yes, even Tesla. BYD's new charging architecture kills the ICE pit stop advantage, the internal combustion engine pit stop advantage, entirely by pushing 1,500 kilowatts of peak power through a single cable. To understand the sheer power of that electrical flow, they say think of kilowatts as the width of a water pipe filling a swimming pool. A standard home charger sort of trickles power overnight at roughly 7 kilowatts, like a garden hose, filling a swimming pool with your garden hose. Think about it that way. A Tesla supercharger, on the other hand, long considered to be the gold standard of public fast charging, well, that maxes out at 250 kilowatts. So 7 kilowatts on your home charger, 250 kilowatts on a Tesla supercharger. Now, BYD is unleashing six times that amount of energy, effectively hooking the car up to a high-pressure municipal water main with 1,500 kilowatts of power during a single cable charge, and that goes up to 2,100 kilowatts if using a dual gun setup. So it is not even close to what we are currently doing now, if true. During a live demonstration on stage, BYD plugged in its new Han L sedan, and they made the battery jump from 10% to 80% capacity in exactly 6 minutes and 30 seconds.
Wow.
That's not an American car company doing that. Thanks, Donald Trump. That's China doing that. They don't fight endless foreign wars. We do. They don't have drill baby drill children in charge. They spend their trillions of dollars not on war, but on innovation, technical innovation. Yes, it's easier with a dictator in charge. I get it. But then again, you know, we have fossil fuel companies essentially in charge, effectively buying our elections. So really, what's the difference? Well, among them, we don't spend on innovation. We spend on whatever it is that the fossil fuel companies need us to spend on, apparently. On the keynote screen back in Shenzhen, China, BYD officially declared a charging speed of 1 second of charging equals 2 kilometers. In real-world driving terms, 5 minutes plugged into this hardware yields between 250 and 310 miles of driving range. In 5 minutes. Of course, a 1,500 kilowatt charger is useless if there's not a network to plug into. So to solve this, BYD is confirming it is rolling out 15,000 of these megawatt charging stations across China by the end of this year, 2026. Company's building over 4,000 of these stations independently while deploying the rest through joint ventures. Meanwhile, Trump in this country is attempting to kill the plan that was adopted by Joe Biden and the Democrats to deploy a national EV charger network, whether it's as fast as China's or not, to get out 500,000 chargers by 2030. Donald Trump is trying to kill that. The effort was funded with $7.5 billion in federal funding here in the U.S. $7.5 billion. Well, Trump's been trying to kill that effort while we learned this week that the U.S. is spending $1 billion a day on the war in Iran. So I know that Republicans are all about stopping waste, fraud, and abuse, and that's why they wanted to kill that charging station program, for which cost $7.5 billion, about the same amount as it cost to run the war in Iran for one single week. BYD also has plans to expand this charging network to Europe by the end of 2026. Not the U.S., but China. They're doing this. Not us. China. I will spare you the explanation of how BYD figures out to increase the energy density of its batteries by about 40% over their previous version. It's effectively what Elon Musk had promised 6 years ago back in 2020, but has yet to deliver on. But as Fast Company reports, another big selling point of BYD's new battery tech is its lifetime. Right now, the industry average EV battery lasts around 150 to 300,000 miles. Most of BYD's competitors' batteries will tap out after 1,000 to 2,000 charge cycles. But the Blade 2.0 is rated for over 5,000 charging cycles to guarantee an operational lifespan of 1.2 million kilometers, which is roughly equal to 745,000 miles on your car. Well, not on your car, because you can't buy it.
But not on your gasoline car generally either.
Right. The average American, they note, drives around 13,500 miles a year. So at that pace, you'd have to drive this BYD car every single day for 55 years before hitting the end of its guaranteed battery life. The battery, reports Fast Company, will outlast the metal chassis, the seats, and probably the driver. They note that you would assume that these specifications come with a brutal premium, that it's going to cost a lot for a fancy battery like that. Well, the financial mechanics are moving in reverse here, reportedly. BYD managed to lower the production cost of the Blade 2.0 by 15 to 30% compared to its previous generation, while the previous Blade was mostly hoarded by six-figure luxury vehicles. Now the Chinese company claims that the new batteries and charging architecture are going into their high-volume mainstream 2026 models, which sit in the $19,000 to $30,000 price bracket. This tech will be available across BYD's entire car range, from the luxurious new Yangwang U7 sedan to the budget Dolphin. And apparently, we may have entered a new era for electric vehicles, writes Fast Company. Too bad, they say, it will not be arriving in the U.S. anytime soon.
No, it will not. And of course, you may be wondering how China is going to provide all of the electricity for this. Just a reminder, China has been installing and deploying wind and solar projects.
Oh, that doesn't work. The wind and solar. You can't watch the TV at night when it's dark.
China has been deploying wind and solar at more than the rest of the world combined every single year. Plus, if you have concerns about mining.
It can't be true. Fox News said China will never go along with any of this. I don't know where you get this stuff, Des.
So anyway, if you're concerned about the mining for the raw materials for all of these batteries, remember that materials for batteries can be recycled almost indefinitely in perpetuity, whereas fossil fuel mining is multiples more than batteries mining, and fossil fuels can never be recycled.
Well, so anyway, and we don't even need to remember that, Des, because we don't need to worry about it. We're not going to get the cars here. Maybe Europe will get it here. We impose a 100% tariff, I think, on these Chinese cars, so they're essentially unavailable to us. But, you know, don't worry. Donald Trump says it'll be a golden age for the American car companies. Just trust him on all of this. That he alone will have saved it. Maybe we can even figure out how to run those cars on beautiful, clean coal. So there's nothing to worry about. Don't look at what's going on in China. Don't pay attention to any of this. No, you don't need a car that runs more than 600 miles on a charge and charges in 5 minutes. We're making America great again. Let's get to it. Our latest Green News Report.
You can see that the rain water is actually black, also saturated, it appears, with oil.
Trump's war in Iran is bad for the environment and the climate.
The Middle East is the main source of nitrogenous fertilizer for farmers here in the U.S. These fertilizers are used primarily on crops that are planted in the spring, like corn.
War in the Middle East is also disrupting global fertilizer supplies. Plus,
what we've seen is a disaster under your leadership, Ms. Noem.
Kristi Noem fired as DHS secretary, but FEMA remains a disaster.
All of those disasters and probably more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So he's saying, hey, guys, we get the oil. I'm still going to insure your ships. So go through the strait. Sow some guts and go through that strait.
You go through that strait, Brian Kilmeade, sitting on the couch at Fox News in New York. Very courageous. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, so everything I hear is going very, very well in the Middle East.
Well, that's an interesting take on it. Donald Trump's war on Iran has quickly escalated into a broader regional conflict. Iran's effective closure of the Strait of Hormuz, through which a fifth of the world's oil and gas is transported, and Iran's retaliatory attacks on oil and gas infrastructure have ground production to a halt in the region.
Who could have predicted it?
Global oil prices skyrocketed over the weekend to more than $100 a barrel before settling back on Monday after Trump said the war is, quote, very complete, pretty much.
I'm sure it is.
Oil prices are still about 40% higher than before Trump attacked Iran, and retail gas prices are still spiking across the U.S. War is also really bad for the environment and climate change. Over the weekend, the Israeli military struck several Iranian oil storage depots around Tehran, triggering massive explosions, thick clouds of toxic smoke, and black, carcinogenic, oily rain falling across the city. Officials warned residents to shelter in place because the oily rain could be contaminated with toxic hydrocarbons and acid rain that can cause chemical burns and lung damage.
Oily rain.
Yes, environmental experts say the oily rain could also cause long-term contamination of water supplies, food, and soil.
Yeah, I guess it could.
Plus, burning all of the oil that was stored in multiple depots also released a huge burst of climate-warming carbon emissions. In addition to the threat to global oil supplies, Middle East nations also depend on desalination for most of their drinking water. Over the weekend, Bahrain accused Iran of damaging one of its desalination plants, though officials say it remained online. Iran said a U.S. airstrike had damaged one of their desalination plants. Experts warn that destabilizing the region's water supplies by knocking out desalination plants would qualify as a war crime. Here in the U.S., Trump's war on Iran could also hit hard for U.S. farmers because the Middle East is also one of the world's most critical suppliers of fertilizer. The war has already sent global fertilizer prices soaring ahead of the critical spring planting season, raising concerns for higher food prices. But for Americans struggling with rising costs for energy and food, Republican Congressman Mark Alford of Missouri has a message.
Whether you want to call it a war or not, we are putting energy, resources, money into this. It is going to take a little bit of sacrifice on the part of Americans.
Why? Why do I have to sacrifice?
In other news, over the weekend, deadly tornadoes tore across the Midwest. For Michigan, it was an unusually early onset of spring weather turbulence. Michigan saw its earliest EF3 tornado ever recorded. Tornadoes in the upper Midwest are rare, but statistics indicate tornadoes are forming in more unusual places more frequently, linked to global warming. Donald Trump fired Kristi Noem from her position as DHS secretary.
Sad.
Noem caused enormous damage to the Federal Emergency Management Agency, slashing staffing levels and pausing most disaster funding, leading to extensive delays for disaster recovery. We'll see if Noem's apparent successor, Republican Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, if confirmed, continues to dismantle FEMA. And finally, the Trump administration held a high-profile oil and gas lease sale in Alaska late last week and got no takers. Literally, zero companies bid for the chance to drill in the harsh environment off the coast of Alaska, despite new extra-low royalty rates. It is the second failed Arctic offshore lease sale in a row.
Also sad. Drill, baby, drill. You can make oily rain. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Purple rain,
thank you very much, Desi Doyen, our producer. Thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show or any other we have done since the beginning of time, you can download them all for free at bradblog.com. Share them with those you know, love, or hate. You can drop me email if you like. I am bradcast@bradblog.com. You'll find me on the social medias, especially Blue Sky at The Brad Blog. And by the way, when you stop by the blog, please do consider a donation to help us stay on your public airwaves. We are 100% listener supported. Thank you in advance. All right, we will see you at all of the above. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener supported, thanks to listeners like you who drop by bradblog.com/donate.